Unit 1, Ideology, Meaning, Characteristics and Significance. Structure. Page 1. 1.0 Objectives. 1.1 Introduction. 1.2 Ideology, Meaning and Characteristics. 1.3 Ideology, Its Varieties. 1.4 Ideology, Its Significance. 1.5 Ideology Revisited. 1.6 Conclusion. 1.7 Let us sum up. 1.8 Keywords. 1.9 Some useful books. 1.10 Answers to check your progress. Page 2. 1.0 Objectives. After going through this unit, you will be able to understanding the meaning of ideology, describe the characteristics of ideology, discuss the significance of ideology. 1.1 Introduction. Liberalism, Marxism, and evolutionary socialism are the dominant ideologies of the present-day world. All of them had their origin in England and Europe and had been concerned with the socio-economic, political and cultural aspirations of the individual, which emerged from such massive movements as the Renaissance, the Reformation and the Industrial Revolution. All the three ideologies aim to bring about socio-economic transformation in consonance with the needs of industrial and technological societies. Whereas liberalism believed that its objective would be attained through the principles of individual liberty, rights, rule of law, constitutionalism, democracy, secularism, capitalism, reason, science, and progress, Marxism rejected the capitalist base of liberalism and asserted that the freedom of the individual could be achieved only through the establishment of a classless and stateless communist society. It presented a revolutionary program for the emancipation of the working class and called the workers of all countries to unite and overthrow the capitalist order by a violent revolution and establish a proletarian state so that conditions for a classless society could be created. Evolutionary socialism attempted to synthesize liberalism and Marxism, while agreeing with the Marxist aim of establishing a socialist society. It rejected its revolutionary method and preferred the liberal, constitutional and democratic methods of achieving it. In the 20th century, and particularly after the Second World War, the distinction between the reformist type of liberalism and evolutionary socialism blurred day by day, and both of them emerged into what is called the welfare state. A unique phenomenon of the international order after the Second World War has been the division of the world into three broad categories known as the three worlds. The first world consists of England, Western Europe, USA, Canada, Australia and Japan. These countries believe in the liberal ideology of individual rights and civil liberties, constitutional government, liberal democracy, capitalist economy and social mobility. Page 3. From the industrial and technological point of view, these are the most advanced countries of the world. The second world consists of the USSR and East European countries. These countries consciously adopted the Marxist theory of social and political change and through centralized planned economy, collective ownership of the means of production and a regimented society have attained considerable social and economic progress. The unique feature of these countries is that they achieved tremendous socio-economic changes during the 20th century itself and that also during the last 50 odd years. The third world consists of the countries of Asia, Africa and Latin America other than the countries of Western Bloc or the Socialist Bloc. The third world consists of more than 100 countries with 45% of the world population, 48% of the area, 14% of the gross income and with an industrial production of around 8%. It comprises of those states and territories which exhibit neither developed capitalist nor developed socialist economies, many of which have emerged from colonial and primitive rules. The Third World Theory consists of the comparative analysis of economic and social conditions of the three worlds and an attempt to understand the Third World in proper perspective. However, according to Stricton, the distinction among the world is political rather than economic. It might consist of the reluctance or the inability of the Third World to fit comfortably into either of the major political blocs and its tendency to act as a self-developed political system. According to Sargent, the Third World countries are trying to find a third way of development which is neither capitalist nor communist. Capitalism is rejected because it is associated with the colonial rulers who ruined their economies. Communism is rejected because it is authoritarian and because many of the Third World leaders rejected the central concept of Marxism's class struggle. Thus, ideology is not only a dominant politico-economic term, but also a powerful thought that commits the belief to isolate and identify on certain firm tenets, the impact of which could be far-reaching. Ideologies are normally represented through an idea, but it can also be represented through a song, symbol, training belief, faith, etc. 1.2. Ideology, meaning and characteristics. Ideology or doctrine is a type of political theory which upholds a certain political system in its broadest sense and the values and ideals that sustain it as the final approximation of the human mind to an ideal arrangement and therefore claiming this finality seeks to realize it. Page 4. The test of a political ideology lies in its application. Thus, Preston King says that an ideology will either involve the actual application of a coherent system of political ideas to a political system in such a way as to direct its activities, or it involves the serious distinction of making this application. In other words, ideology refers to an action-related system of political ideas. They are sets of ideas concerning change or defense of existing political structures and relationships. Ideology involves commitment and action as a part of the political process. It may or may not possess a logical or philosophical character at all, but it must possess a political character content without which it cannot be described an ideology, a guide to direct political action. The real meaning of ideology differs from that of certain other terms that are mistakenly regarded as interchangeable with it. For instance, ideology and mentality cannot be taken as analogous terms. While an ideology is a system of thought which has been intellectually worked out and organized, usually in written form by scholars and intellectuals or with their help, mentality denotes a way of thinking and feeling which is more emotional than rationalized, something like a cast of mind. Ideology and political philosophy cannot be regarded as synonymous terms. Political philosophy evokes reflection and understanding, while ideology is more likely to imply commitment and action. Keeping in view the essential fact that a political scientist cannot base his entire analysis on empirical knowledge alone, and that he has to choose and approach his particular field of specialization equipped with the values and attitudes of his own political culture that will affect his political analysis, we may pinpoint certain general characteristics of the term political ideology as under. Ideologies are not the same as value and attitudes of the political culture. They are programs for action and instruments of evaluation. They are a response to and a means of defending or changing existing political systems. They provide a language to conduct an examination of political process. Page 5. It is not the content of the ideologies alone that distinguishes one from another. It is the function of the ideology within the political system that creates differentiation. Ideological emphasis is a significant characteristic of the totalitarian states, but in liberal democracies, the role of the underlying ideologies is often less obtrusive but no less important in different respects. Ideologies do change, but this is not necessarily due to their being corrupted or to the death of their role in the political process, nor are the changes simply the result of political opportunism. An ideology is impossible to translate directly into practice. There has to be accommodation to political realities, a translation which may result in ideological splits between former ideological colleagues and a distortion of reality to fit the ideological interpretation. It may be that ideologies need enemies to establish their credibility. Ideologies may be classified according to their role in relation to the political system as rightist or leftist, reactionary or progressive, conservative or revolutionary, reformist or radical, and the like. No political system is, however, absolutely free from the bond of ideology. It is a different thing that the adherents to the ideology of liberalism may claim and cry for the end of ideology. It is the ideology that constitutes the keystone of the arch of a political party or a group. It may be asserted that a scuffle between the two leaders, as Stalin versus Trotsky in Russia, or in between two groups, as between Maoists and Luists in China, or between two countries, as Soviet Union and China, is conducted within the framework of ideological arguments. A study of the term political ideology, after keeping in view its general characteristics and diverse ramifications, show that ideological politics is doctrinaire, dogmatic, transitory, prescriptive, polemical, and propagandist, partisan, combative, and destructive, whose appeal is the nature of a religious belief which would not suffer either doubt or criticism. It is the creed or character that makes it thoroughly impervious to skepticism or to a critical scrutiny. The above explanation gives an impression that ideologies attempt to be a description political reality and a blueprint for action. The function of the ideology in this way becomes either to bring about a change or to justify an existing political system. Page 6. A student of comparative politics is thus concerned with the subject of political power in respect of its distribution between the people and their rulers. The result is that, according to a writer on comparative politics, ideologies are as much a factor in stability and political unity as a source of challenge to existing political structures. They can be used to support the dominant political elites and to disarm their political rivals, and they can be useful in diverting attention from difficult internal problems. Above all, they are a means of legitimizing the government and policies of that government. Thus, the term ideology refers to a faithful thinking which is expressive in terms of its agenda for action to realize the goals set forth by a faith. Its characteristics therefore clearly that ideology is not only an abstract idea but also a concept complete with concrete methodology for action. Its characteristics therefore clearly that ideology is not only an abstract idea but also a concept complete with concrete methodology for action. Ideology, as understood above, does not only help to legitimate a political system by its expressed faith in a methodology of action, but could also vary in its approach. Here are some of these varieties presented to strengthen your understanding of ideology. Check your progress 1. Note 1. Use the space given below for your answer. 2. Also check your answer with the clue given at the end of the unit. Question 1. Discuss the meaning and characteristics of ideology. 1.3. ideology, its varieties. Ideology of liberalism. Opposed to the ideology of totalitarianism, whether rightist or leftist, is the ideology of philosophy of liberalism that stands for the values of freedom, democracy, and humanism. Page 7. Its assumptions may be said to lie in the paraphernalia of a democratic order having representative government, responsible executive, socio-economic and political checks and balances, independence of judiciary and rule of law. It has three fundamental assumptions: limited government, pluralistic society, and unlimited scope for human choices. The government operates in a world of autonomous, spontaneously self-creating, voluntary associations at a margin of social activity. The society has a pluralistic character. It implies that it is made up of a host of autonomous sections and associations, but to believe that each enshrines value or interests dear to its members. Finally, the scope for choices implies that truth is a matter of individual conscience, where all consciences are held by an act of faith to be equal either in the sight of God or in the sight of man. Two working conclusions follow from this, namely toleration and the qualification of majority rule. The real difficult problem about the ideology or trend of liberalism finds place in its essentially flexible character that takes it to the pole of being thoroughly democratic on one hand to that of being authoritarian on the other. Despite the fact that the three assumptions of liberalism cannot be found in all countries of the world on account of varying political cultures, democracy involves more than the existence of a particular political structure. Historical evidences are there to confirm that the American and British systems of government could easily evolve into dictatorship of the executive in the absence of an organized opposition, free elections, a free press, and deeply rooted traditions of individual rights. Democracy can work only when the values associated with it, particularly those relating to speech and opposition, are fully understood and accepted by all the people. This, in turn, is dependent upon a whole cluster of social conditions. It is on account of the recognition of this fact that liberalism stands for justifying government control over the liberties of the people in varying degrees according to the exigencies of social interest. Realizing this essential fact, a great liberal thinker like John Stuart Mill endorsed. A people may be unwilling or unable to fulfill the duties which particularly form of government requires of them. A rude people, though in some degree alive to the benefits of civilized governments to be really advantageous to them, will require to be in considerable degree despotic to be won over, which they do not themselves exercise alone, and which imposes a great amount of forcible restraint upon their actions. Page 8. It is, however, as a result of either misunderstanding or deliberately distorting the real state of affairs that some writers like Daniel Bell have spoken of the end of ideology in liberal democratic societies. The issue of economic development has come to stay in the forefront, and the state of political stability has almost become a well-settled phenomenon. The people have developed firm faith in the institutions of their political culture, and as such, they have nothing to fear in that regard. However, the issue of economic development has come to be the main goal that they want to achieve by living within the broad framework of a well-established democratic system. It is for this important reason that there is hardly any difference of opinion between the leaders of the Democratic and Republican parties in the United States, and not so basically hostile relationship between the Conservative and Labour parties of Great Britain. In spite of all this, it would be a mistake to say that the ideology which once was a road to action has come to a dead end. in this important direction, the fact is that the shackles of ideology have become a bit loose, with the result that while the liberals have taken to diverse stands that often make them look like ideological neutral, the socialists and the communists have likewise shown their proneness towards a gradual acceptance of the liberal democratic political values. All this should be interpreted not as an end or decline of ideology, but as a change from one position to another. It indicates that, like the world itself, the ideology is also in a state of constant flux that may be discerned even in the changing behavior of the socialist and communist parties of various major countries like France, Italy, Germany, and even the Soviet Union. All Ball says, the actual ideological standing of various parties may be the subject for a more detailed debate and may demand terminological variations, but the important point is that this sort of movement does not necessarily imply the end of ideological adherence, and that the supporters at the end of ideological arguments have in fact made this mistake because of their narrow definition of ideology as a concept interchangeable with revolutionary utopianism. Page 9. Ideology of Fascism. Opposed to Marxism are the ideologies of fascism, also Nazism, having a totalitarian character, and liberalism pertaining to a democratic model. Both may be treated as rightist in the sense that they are opposed to the substitution of the present order by a new one, and that too by means of a bloody revolution. The common point between the ideologies of Marxism-Leninism and fascism, however, finds place in the fact that both subscribe to the system of totalitarianism, and in this respect, both are basically different from the ideology of liberalism that attaches sanctity to the principles and norms of democratic order. A student of comparative politics is, therefore, concerned with the role of three ideologies having points of resemblance and difference between one another without agreeing with this observation of some critics that liberalism cannot be given the place of an ideology. The ideology of fascism, as it developed in Italy, desired what the founder father of this doctrine, Benito Mussolini, said, a corporate state laying emphasis on the essential characteristic of this state. Mussolini said, three conditions are necessary for the full, complete, integral, and revolutionary fulfillment of the corporate state. A single party, by means of which there shall be effectuated political control as well as economic control, and which shall be above the competing interests, a bond which unites all in a common faith. Nor is that enough. We must have, as well as that single party, the totalitarian state, the state which absorbs in itself to transform and make them effective all the energy, all the interests, and all the hopes of the people. The third is to live a period of the highest ideal tension. While Mussolini pinpointed the word corporate state, Hitler did the same for idea that signified the exclusive and unassailable leadership of the supreme leader. As in a mood of resentment, Hitler said that every member of the party has to do what the leader orders. The leader incorporates the idea and alone knows its ultimate goal. The ideology of fascism has two essential characteristics, totalitarianism and Marxism. Its totalitarian character is constrained in these words of Mussolini. Fascist conception is for the state, and it is the individual in so far as he coincides with the state, and it is for the individual in so far the universal conscience and will of man in his historical existence. Similarly, Hitler, leader of the Nazi Party in Germany, said that the individual is transitory, the Volk is permanent. The position of this single echo is exclusively determined by the interest of the Volk as a whole. Page 10. The whole ideology of fascism is dominated by the dogmas of sovereign state and irresistible government. All particularistic interests of individual must be suppressed by an omnipotent hierarchical organization of the nation. A citizen's political obligations are more important than his rights. This is the fascist totalitarianism which recognizes no sphere of individual life as immune from political authority. The true fascist, says Gentile, is fascist in his home, so school and workshop as well in his politics. The keynote of fascism is contained in these three words of Mussolini: nothing against the state, nothing over it, nothing beyond it. Fascism pertains to the category of rightist totalitarianism in view of the fact that it stands for the protection and promotion of the interests of the bourgeois in class and also patronizes religion that, as the communists say, goes to the exclusive advantage of the same class. Both Mussolini and Hitler made serious plans to destroy the Soviet Union. Thus, it is said that fascism, if anti-Marxism, which seeks to destroy the enemy by evolvement of a radically opposed and yet related ideology and by the fuse of almost identical and yet typically modified methods, always, however, within the unyielding framework of national self-assert in an autonomy. It is on account of this rightist character of fascism that it is seen as conservative in that it is counter-revolutionary. As already pointed out, one important point common to both ideologies is that they stand for totalitarianism, a form of political order that crushes individual liberty, tolerates no opposition, desires complete state centralization, glorifies the nation and emphasizes the idea of a state as a power system, exalts conditions of a world war and denounces conditions of peace, tranquility, and has no faith in the idea of liberalism and humanism. In other words, both ideological stand for a non-democratic system, about which Bernard E. Brown thus observes: all non-democratic regimes, whether autocratic or totalitarian, reject democratic assumptions concerning the value of criticism and the use of representative institutions. In contrast to traditional autocracies, a modern totalitarian state secures the participation of the masses, not just the palace circles, in some great endeavor. Totalitarian states are always in movement, since inaction permits the opposition to rally. Coercion and terror are used against opponents, but the legitimacy of the regime in the long run depends upon popular identification with the goals of the leadership. Page 11. Ideology of Marxism. According to Marxism, all fundamental historical changes are determined by the means of production or economic forces. A change in the means of production brings about a corresponding change in the relations of production. If the handmill creates a society with the feudal lord, the steam mill creates a society with the industrial capitalist. It creates the two classes in the society, they have and the have-nots, while the former are rulers, exploiters and oppressors, the latter are the ruled, exploited and oppressed. The function of Marxian ideology is, therefore, to explain the nature of social relationships and to suggest ways so that the present bourgeois society is subjected by a new socialist order. The rule of the bourgeois is thus to be replaced by the rule of the masses, the workers, artisans, peasants, and all those who toil. For this reason, Marx exposed the liberal myths that surrounded the political institutions of modern societies, and he accused all social theorists who analyzed social relationships in terms of power as victims of the illusions of the epoch. He criticized them for accepting the truth as that was, in fact, part of the ideological support of the ruling class. Marx lived and wrote in the 19th century, that was the age of capitalism. It was his orthodox disciple Lenin who saw the development of capitalism into the final phase of imperialism, and thus he made Marxism up to date by adding his interpretation. While Marx predicted in his Communist Manifesto of 1848 that the law of dialectical materialism would automatically operate to bring about the doom of capitalism, Lenin gave it a particular twist to the prophecy by adding that in the changed conditions of the 20th century, revolution would have to be created and that the party of the workers and peasants would play the role of a vanguard in the bloody revolution, whose object would be to bring about a socialist society. The ideology of Marxism-Leninism, therefore, takes the society as a theatre of struggle going on between the two rival classes of the exploiters and the exploited, and desires its substitution by a new order that has a classless character during the transitional phase, culminating into a condition of statelessness in the final phase of socialism. The function of ideology is thus to understand political reality in terms of the doctrine of class war, according to which the class conflict between the have and the have-nots will inevitably end in the victory of the larger classes, the proletariat, and this triumph will usher in the classless society. Page 12. The essence of the ideology of Marxism-Leninism may be seen in a statement of Feiner. He says it has three variants. Firstly, that society is monistic and therefore minority or sectional rights must be eliminated. It is denied that the government ought to recognize and accept the existence of various sections of society and undertake to conciliate the claims of one as against another. On the contrary, while only one section of society, the proletariat and its allies, is worthy, and the government has the duty of suppressing all other sections and governing in the interests of this worthy section alone. Secondly, a government so functioning is supposed to be doing it in the name of some transcendent end, of something which has been described as a consummately value one, to which all individuals and groups in society and present generation as against future generations must be subordinated. In the communist case, this consummately value is the realization of an ideal social system called communism on an international scale. And in pursuing this ideal, Marxist philosophy suggests that the government of the state is simply giving history a push, since the laws of society, as discovered by Marx and Lenin, indicate that transition to communism is an ineluctable trend in society. Thirdly, these laws of society are held to be scientifically demonstrable. And so, instead of judgments on society and morals being regarded as matters of individual choice of conscience, they are held to be matters of scientific certainty. Thus, an insight into the varieties of ideologies will help us appreciate the finalities of its significance and characteristics. 1.4. Ideology, its significance. A study of political values within the framework of a science of ideas or ideology, as generally understood, has a significance of its own in the field of comparative politics, in view of the fact that in every type of political system, policies are formulated and decisions made within a value framework. It is the comparative study of different value and belief systems that involves an attempt to explain why the substantive contents of ideologies such as conservatism in Great Britain, liberalism in the United States, fascism in Italy and Spain, Marxism in Germany, socialism or communism in the Soviet Union and China, etc., vary from one extreme to another. Allied with this is the issue that a comparative study of ideologies should explain why the social groups in certain countries of the world develop different ideologies pertaining to the promotion of their specific interests. These differences and similarities can only be accounted for in terms of such factors as the effectiveness of political parties, the existence of habits of compromise, the tradition of political leadership, the productivity of the economy, and so on. page 13. The study of ideological trends among key groups like those of the army and the intellectuals is especially important during periods of rapid political change. The nature and intensity of ideological conflict provides valuable clues to the degree of stability and instability in a given system. Thus, virtually every aspect of a political system can be illuminated by examination of the relationship between groups and ideologies. Thus, the significance of ideologies grew in the midst of wars, once after the First World War and later during the end of the Second World War, when most of the imperialist nations their freedom. In their two contexts, two things speak of the significance of ideology. In the first instance, when countries like Italy and Germany, with fascism the face of ideology, war, masked with self-pride, nationalism, etc., which was more apparent and dangerous as it turned out to be. In the post-World War, the ideological significance was hidden and divided between nations that chose their path in post-imperialist, to be their socialist or democratic or mixed. However, in the modern days, freedom as an ideology is masked with greater threats. This is the significance of ideology in different forms, and content has been quite presenting even to this day. Check your progress too. Note, use the space given below for your answer. 2. Also check your answer with the clue given at the end of the unit. Question 1. Evaluate the significance of ideology.
Page 14.
1.5. Ideology Revisited.
Let us now look at the conception of power or authority that provides a framework of decision-making to ideologically oriented movements in German history. Here we are concerned with two approaches that are basically opposed to one another. While the approach of elitism stands invariably for the rule of the minority over the majority, the approach of Marxism does the same for the substitution of the rule of the class by the rule of a classless society. The essential point of difference lies in the nature of the ideology the ruling authority believes in. Thus, while elitism adheres to what Michael calls the iron law of oligarchy, Marxism stands for what Paddy terms the concept of the mass. The approaches are, however, interconnected in the sense that one cannot be understood without knowing the other, for both are essentially concerned with the distribution of political power, but in different set of ideological moorings. Elitism, that was described by its ardent protagonists like Pareto, Mosca, Burnham, and C. Wright Mills, as a formula assert that political power is unevenly distributed in society. It resides in the hands of a very small minority or a group of chosen few, that is known as the elite. The ruling class is always an elite, and whenever there is a change in the ruling class, it means the replacement of one elite by another. The sources of power of the political elite are mainly like military, economic, and religious, though the factor of organizational skills may be said to have its own importance. Though there are points of difference among leading elitist writers in this direction, there is agreement that forms of representative government are merely disguises to cover minority. There are problems of who actually constitute the political elite and whether it is defined narrowly or widely. Also, there are differences on the means of recruitment, which there is unanimity on the inevitability of the minority rule. The principle of elitism thus rejects the findings of earlier political scientists who concerned themselves with the assumption of government as a rule of the people, whether few or many. Mosca says that past political thinkers were less concerned with determining constant trends in human societies that were the arts by which an individual or a class of individuals might succeed in achieving supreme power in a given society, and in thwarting the efforts of other individuals or groups to supplant them. In the name of historical method, Mosca asserted that previous generations lacked the accurate knowledge of history since they ignored this incontrovertible truth that political power was always held by the very few people. Page number 15. Following the same trend, Michael said that the law of oligarchy, which he formulated on the basis of the facts of experience, was inevitable and an essential characteristic of all human aggregates, and historical evolution mocks all the prophylactic measures that have been adopted for the prevention of oligarchy. In brief, the doctrine of elitism rejects the proposition that political power is held by the people or even by a class of people. Summing up the ideology of elitism, Parry observes, "Government in a democracy was certainly of the people, but only of the ruling class. The supposed law which required refutation was that asserted by socialists, according to which a classless, egalitarian society would be the inevitable outcome of the class conflict which had characterized all previous history. The law was a mere pious hope which deceived the lower classes in society, but at the same time significantly bolstered their confidence." Fundamentally opposed to this is the Marxian view of political power. Here the emphasis is on the word class. The forces of history find their tangible embodiment in the contending social classes. Hence, the history of all hitherto existing societies is the history of class struggle. The dominant class does not capitulate once its economic basis becomes important and its political role obsolete. As freemen and slaves in the slave society and lords and serfs in the feudal age were contending for the seizure of power, so the capitalists and the working classes are at war against each other in the present bourgeois system. The socialist society would emerge out of the present one, and then this class war would come to an end with the establishment of a classless society. Thus, the need for a revolution in which the working class would seize the reins of the state remains for the Marxists of the Article of Faith. The ideology of Marxism, therefore, contends that political power is always in the hands of the socially dominant class. Once it was with the freemen, then with the feudal lords. Now it is with the capitalists. The religion of the workers is to struggle for the seizures of power so that the bourgeois class rule is replaced by the rule of the proletariat. In this way, Marxian ideology offers to the working class a hope. It also presents what appears to be, and what is claimed to be, a science of society that explains the nature of class relationships within the existing and all hitherto existing societies, and predicts the eventual inevitable dominance of the working class, to be followed in turn by the replacement of the rule of a class by the rule of a society without the classes of the exploiters and the exploited, the oppressors and the oppressed. Page 16. Such an assurance must have seemed all the more urgent, since the working class is already armed with an ideology masked as a science of social revolution. It is said in a tone of its appreciation, "The comprehensive character of Marxist social analysis was unrivaled. The status of politics and political leadership, the role of the middle class and of representative institutions, the character of ideology, the situation of the masses, all were within the compass of scientific socialism." Political parties are said to be the most important ideological carrier and interpreter. It is the factor of ideology that provides comprehensive theories of politics and that makes it unnecessary to deal with individual issues on their individual merits. As Beer and Ulam observe, ideologies are like theoretical sausage machines. One feeds in problematic meat at one end, and out comes a string of policy sausages at the other, beautifully integrated and consistent. And because they obviate real thought on individual issues, they can become terribly necessary under certain conditions, particularly when the political system presents an unusually large number of unsolved issues, or, putting the same point another way, when an unusually large area of behavior is subject to political decision-making. Broadly speaking, political parties, from the standpoint of their ideological foundation, may be put into two kinds, rightists and leftists. When the rightist parties are those that stand for the maintenance of the status quo or desire very slow and peaceful changes, the leftist parties stand for breaking the status quo and advocate rapid and violent changes. There are a number of intermediate varieties between these two poles. For instance, the rightists or conservatives may be either traditional or authoritarian, and the leftists or radicals may be either liberal or authoritarian, all assuming diverse nomenclatures as socialists, democratic socialists, liberal democratic, etc. It is also possible that there may be a party having no ideology but organized and working on populist lines. The Congress Party of India offers a unique example in this regard. What is peculiarly noticeable in this regard is that even some communists have been accused by their critics of being sold to bourgeois elements. The name of the Communist Party of France may be cited hereabout, which a critic has said. Page 17. Not at any moment did they wish to torpedo the Gaullist government, whose foreign policy corresponds to the fondest wishes at which permits their progressive integration into French society. Obviously, they would have taken care of the state if it had been handed to them. But their constant objective was not to make a revolution, but not let themselves be outflanked on their left by the students, by the Maoists, by the young workers. As pointed out above, Indian National Congress affords the peculiar cases of a party without ideological moorings. It has a distinctly amorphous character, keeping which in view it is described as a platform and not a party by its critics. Once it was essentially a freedom movement. Being in politics in the pre-independence days almost meant being in Congress for reasons of idealism, prestige, and spirit of service in the cause of the country. The same trend has continued even after the advent of independence, no matter it adopted the ideal of socialistic pattern in society in 1955. The triumph of this party under the stewardship of Nehru and its resurgence under the leadership of Mrs. Indira Gandhi has been owing to this important reason that it has been like an Aristotelian party, a party of the middle way if it was to survive and succeed. And the Congress political leaders became molded as a man of the center normally permitting himself the luxury of only a shade of emphasis on one side or the other. Thus, the role of ideology in comparative party systems is made from a sociological standpoint. It may be found that the stiffness of ideological bond has declined owing to transformation in social and economical spheres. Professor Otto Kirchheim has referred to this as the emergence of the unified middle-class society, which includes the working class, civil servants, white-collar workers, and professionals. Agreeing with the view, Brown says, on the one hand, the old independent artisans and shopkeeper is disappearing. The new middle classes tend to gain their livelihood in some kind of bureaucratic enterprise, whether public or private, within which they had a degree of autonomy. They have lost the independence, or illusion of independence, which in the past gave them a consciousness of superiority over workers. On the other hand, percentage of national wealth allotted to the working class has vastly increased. Page 18. Members of the working and middle class have thus come to experience the same kind of social discipline and share the same aspirations, values, tastes, dress, and the leisure time habits. They seek a large portion of the national income in order to better enjoy a common way of life. Politics thus becomes a matter of slicing up the cake, not debating whether to bake someone else, and thus something else. Politics thus becomes a matter of slicing up the cake, not debating whether to bake something else, and thus the idea of revisiting of ideology was to give you, as students of political theory, some more examples of how ideology as a strong thought is the liberals and conservatives alike. Check your progress 3. Note, use the space given below for your answer. Also check your answer with the clue given at the end of the unit. Write a critical essay on ideology. 1.6. Conclusion. Though the issue of the end of ideology became very prominent in the 1960s, it may be found that leading social and political theorists of the West have interpreted the situation in different ways. A look at the writings of sociologists like S. M. Lipset, B. Moore, H. Marcuse, H. S. Hughes, H. Keniston, and J. may nod, showed that the end of ideology has been identified with several related and unrelated situations like de-radicalization, de-ideologization, and demotivationalization of politics. Lipset has paid too much importance to the fact of pragmatism, in this regard commitment to which has blurred the distinction between the right and the left. He has confined his attention to the doctrine of Marxism in his study of the term ideology, and thus come to hold that the end of ideology and the decline of Marxian revolutionary ideas amount to the same thing. Page 19. Others, like Maynard, have confused the whole debate by coining the phrase of ideological pluralism in advanced countries, resulting in the situation of ideological appeasement. In the view of C. Wright Mills, ideology is like a mood, and for this reason any political reflection that is of possible public significance is ideological. Haber contends that the alleviation of mass discontent by government actions has brought about the end of a revolutionary alternative. The critics of the end of ideology theory depreciate the efforts of the bourgeois writers of the West in the name of offering a new ideology to preserve and justify the discredited capitalist system. In particular, the Marxists call it a new ideology in the age of welfare state, allowing political pluralism, decentralization of power, mixed economy, and parliamentary democracy. Such contentions drew inspiration from the philosophy of status quoism and pragmatism, and thus, instead of exposing the hollowness of the intellectual systems of the bourgeois world, endeavor to distract the attention of the progressive social and political theorists from the real state of affairs. In fact, the end of ideology theory is an ideology of all, of an end to maintain the base intact by significant slight modifications in the superstructures. 1.6. Let's sum up. Though it is true that there may be cases where the element of ideologies either are absent or very weak as a basis of political parties and groups that struggle for giving stability or strength to a political system or to bring out a change in it, it cannot be overlooked that political ideas and values that constitute the moorings of an ideology have significance and relevance of their own. One may disagree with Dante Germino's thesis of ideological reductionism, or may find fault with the positivism of Auguste Comte, who said that men have walked out of theological and metaphysical stages when they were under the influence of supernatural ideas. Among recent writers, one may also refer to Easton and Cobin, who have spoken of the decline of ideology and moved ahead more and more in the direction of factualism and hyperfactualism. Thanks to the contributions of writers like Michael Oakeshott, Hannah Arendt, Bertrand de Jouvenel, Leo Strauss, and Eric Vogelin, that the place of ideology in political theory has been re-recognized. Page 20. The significance of ideology in the study of comparative politics is thus well borne out in the observation of Professor Ball. Thus to claim the political values irrelevant to the functioning of the political system is like Canute ordering to water the reseed. Political ideas bring together discoordinate demands into a more coherent pattern, producing order and arrangement. Most of all, they provide a criterion of relevance, a yardstick by which to judge political aspirations and actions. This is not to deny that they also provide a camouflage to hide materialistic aims within a mass of value-loaded generalizations most political actors claim a wider relevance for their demands than mere self-interest. Yet even this is a significant aspect of the political process. Political ideas allow the expression of preferences. The basic and source of these ideas may be relatively unimportant for analysis of the system. The truth or falsity of the ideas themselves is a matter for theologians and political philosophers. We are concerned with the political significance, hence this write-up. 1.8. Difficult words. Camouflage, concealment, totalitarian, authoritarian, analogous, corresponding, assumption, postulation, exigency, Urgency. 1.9. Some useful books. K. Seshadri, Studies in Marxism and Political Science, New Delhi, People's Pub, 1977. Dante Germino Bivond Ideology. The Revival of Political Theory, New York, Harper and Road, 1967. Martin Selger, Ideology and Politics, London, George Allen and Unwin, 1976. V.P. Varma, Modern Political Theory, Delhi, Vikas, 1975. Page 21. 1.9. Answer to check your progress. Check your progress 1. See section 1.2. Check your progress 2. See section 1.4. Check your progress 3. See section 1.2 and 1.5.
Page 22. It's a blank page.